Hello, this is Michelle Savage. I'm with XBRL US, and we're here today on this podcast to talk about corporate actions and the use of extensible business reporting language, or XBRL, in corporate actions. But first, I'd like to talk about a couple of other issues, specifically US GAAP reporting, and I'd like to introduce the experts that we have with us today. We have Bill Lutz, who is the Deputy Director in the Office of Interactive Disclosure at the Securities and Exchange Commission. And we also have Max Mansour, who is the Global Market Manager at SWIFT. SWIFT is a global cooperative of 8,300 banking institutions that provides a communications platform for financial transactions. So first, as I said, I'd like to turn to Bill at the SEC and talk a little bit about the SEC activities related to XBRL and how XBRL could be a positive for investors. Bill?
Thanks, Michelle. Well, if you've been following it all in the press, there's been quite a bit of activity on XBRL. There are the three recent rules that were adopted, and we have just started to receive filings in the first phase of the adoption of using XBRL to tag the financial statements in the annual filings by corporations. The first phase of this will be approximately 500 to 600 corporations who will file this year, and then over the next 2 years, we will phase it into all of them. And secondly, we have just adopted the latest updates for the GAAP XBRL filings for 09, which reflect all the current changes in FASB and other accounting changes and rule changes. So there's a very solid foundation of something like 15,000 XBRL tags that have now been established. And on this foundation, of course, the SEC will go forward, and of course, we have the corporations, now that XBRL is established, using it for other purposes as well. And in addition to the financials and the 10-K reporting being tagged, there's also tagging in the mutual funds and the NRSRO filings. So there's quite a bit happening all at once, and I would put on my SWAMI hat and project that in the next years, as companies get used to using XBRL, they will expand its use. We know that has happened already in Japan when the Japanese government mandated the XBRL filings, that corporations discovered how useful this technology was and started adopting it for their own internal uses as well as for their filings.
So Bill, would you say that corporate actions is potentially an area that that could be where XBRL could benefit the supply chain as well?
Yes, certainly corporate actions, because as we know, within corporate actions, one of the probably more prominent ones from our perspective is the proxy, the annual proxy statement, and the proxy includes a lot of very useful information that investors, I'm sure, are interested in and would like to access easily. For example, the board of directors, compensation disclosure and analysis, any actions that are submitted. There's a lot in corporate action documents that I think investors will find useful, and particularly XBRL gives the investor access to high quality data that is useful and usable, and that's the key. That is, XBRL frees the data and the information from being locked into a static document, whether it's a Word document or a PDF, and it frees that so that the investor can now get in there and manipulate and access that data quickly and easily and make it useful.
Thank you. And Max, can you tell us a little bit more about the corporate actions announcements that SWIFT obviously transmits a lot of corporate actions data, and can you tell us a little bit about what corporate actions are and how they're processed today?
Yes, corporate actions are, well, there's a lot of them. There's about a million announcements, and there's another 3 million just standard interest payments and things like that, plus a great deal more that are along the lines of a proxy statement or a meeting notice. But, you know, corporate actions announcements are as exactly as Bill said, they're locked in static data. They're locked in a prospectus, a document wrapped up in a lot of legalese that's actually necessary to protect the investor. But that information has to be read by the people that actually process and manage all of the accounts for the investors. We call it asset servicing. And all these asset servicers, the custodians, the central depositories like DTCC, have to translate all this information and create all of the electronic processing and the electronic data that has to flow downstream. Unfortunately, that process really causes some problems because, Michelle, there's an interpretation risk. If I gave a document to 30 people and said, pull out the 10 most important pieces of data out of it, everyone's going to pull out something a little different. Unfortunately, by the time it gets to the investor, it's a bit of a pain. It's very difficult for them to deal with.
So Max, do you mean that when a public company makes an announcement about a corporate action, like a merger or a dividend announcement or stock split, they send it out as a static document and then picked up by all the different distributors?
Yeah, it's picked up by all the distributors. What do you think about the custodian? One investment manager might have 10 or 15, 20 different custodians. Mm-hmm. And these custodians, each one of them has to create the electronic data to be able to attach all of the account information, the holdings, the statement of holdings, all of the actual entitlements that they have. And it may be an election, especially the complex ones are very, very difficult. I mean, a proxy statement is fairly straightforward, but something like a prospectus for a merger or an acquisition or a tender offer, it can be 100, 200, 400 pages long. To dig out the key data elements is very difficult. So this kind of complexity and the long life cycle of a corporate action, sometimes they can last for 2, 3, 4 months. They can be tied to meetings. They can be tied to other related actions. There can be a vote, and if the vote goes a certain way, then there is a merger. If there's not, there's not a merger. There may be a split. There's all kinds of things that are associated. So it's really complex, and it makes it difficult for these intermediaries to get the information in a concrete way to the investor and to give them the amount of time that they need to make decisions to do elections.
So they're taking the information from the issuer, which is a press release or prospectus or something like that, and then they're interpreting it and then resending it. So there's potential for interpreting that information by lots of different entities.
There's a lot of manual processing. I mean, it's just manually having to look. And what happens is every one of these entities, they create a scrubbing operation. They get multiple sources of many people, many different sources that have done the interpretation, and then they try to scrub it and come up with what they call a golden copy. So you have this golden copy process to try to find the right thing at virtually every data provider, at virtually every custodian, at virtually every broker-dealer, and really all the big investment managers that have multiple custodians. They have to repeat mm-hmm. the same thing over and over, and they have to read the paper, too. So
how would, what would inserting XBRL into the process do? Wouldn't that just further the complexity?
Actually, it would resolve a great deal of this problem by getting rid of the possibility of interpreting it differently. If everyone receives the same prospectus data that's been tagged, especially if it's tagged according to a standard, and the standard is ISO 20022. It's the financial standard that's used by, you know, virtually worldwide in terms of communicating this kind of data electronically. And this is all electronic book entry, by the way. This is how all this is managed. So downstream of the actual announcement. But if the investor actually tagged it up or marked it up and said, this is the actual data that I want, this is the actual market date, this is the actual...
You mean the issuer. So if the issuer...
The issuer, absolutely. If the issuer actually marked up, the investor could all read the same thing that everybody else reads from the core document. So it actually cleans it up. The interpretation risk goes away. The extra manual processing and the scrubbing operations reduce tremendously in terms of cost, and the entire mm-hmm. cost of the market's improved.
So you're saying then that in a world with XBRL inserted into the corporate actions process, essentially the issuer would be saying, here's how I want this information to be interpreted. This is exactly what I mean. And then that information would go out to all of the users, the custodians, the data intermediaries, and ultimately to the investors.
Absolutely. It really forms a direct communication link because they have stated in by marking a document exactly what they intend to be understood. And right now, they don't really do that. It's very well protected in terms of a court in a court case trying to prevent some type of litigation, but it doesn't really accelerate or manage the the flow of information and the round trip, we call it, to instruct back to the issuer if there's an instruction, which happens on a lot of the voluntary and the complex type of offers.
So here's my last question for both of you. Who do you think are the biggest beneficiaries of putting corporate actions into XBRL format, and where do you think would be the biggest headache in making this change?
Well, I don't know what Bill thinks about this exactly, but my view is that even though it seems like the intermediaries that have to do all of this scrubbing would be an immediate beneficiary, in essence, they would pass that on to the investor. The investor would get much better timelines. They would get the information quicker and more accurately. They would have more time to make an election decision. And their net cost would improve because there wouldn't be that kind of overhead to have to multi-source everything.
Okay, Bill, any final thoughts on
well,
that? Or
I think from the investor's point of view, you are now getting the information to you with a high degree of accuracy and reliability. We all know that the more that data passes through human hands, the more that error can be introduced. And what XBRL tagging can do is reduce that handling and reduce that error rate. So that in itself is a tremendous benefit for the investor. But secondly, the investor now can access the structured data. And as we all know, once data is structured, it can now be manipulated and controlled so that the investor can get the information that they want. You know, that's just presented. They can go in and move things around, combine, do studies, whatever else. It's a tremendously powerful tool for people who are looking for information that they want in the way that they want it. So it really moves the whole process of information from the issuer's end down to the investor. And now the issuers will provide this much more reliable and adequate disclosure to the investors, who can then use it even more powerfully.
Well, I want to thank you, you both, Bill and Max. I think it's been really helpful and interesting. And I want to invite all of our listeners to join Bill and Max and myself at a conference that we're holding on May 28th here in New York. It's a Corporate Actions 2009 conference, where we're going to delve a bit more deeply into the whole corporate actions process and how data standards and technology standards can be used to improve it, to reduce costs and basically improve accuracy and timeliness for investors. So it's May 28th, and you can learn more about it by going to our website at www.xbrl.us. And thanks very much for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.